session number 11963, reel 8.
Captain Henderson, Reel 8, you were telling me the story of the attack on Bazentin-le-Petit,
yes.
On the Somme, probably September. You were telling me, as you remembered it, I know it's difficult, a long time ago.
Yes, well, we had moved down to the Somme before the Somme actually was a battlefield, and we were not the first over the top. In the attack, we were in reserve, and it was sometime after the first day that we moved. And the place where we were told we were going to was Bazentin-le-Grand, and we found afterwards that was a place called Bazentin-le-Petit, small, you know. We didn't have much fighting to do. The whole thing was in an uproar, and it was very difficult to get this, that, and the other.
How did when you went over the top? How did it compare with your experiences at Second Ypres? You know, when you
yes, well, it was altogether different. There was a new arm to consider. We lectured about them and this sort of thing, and what we might expect, but. But don't think it cut much ice, because most of the tanks were crippled before they got very far. It was a very bad day for the tanks. They were a success in a way, but you couldn't say it was going to alter the aspect of the whole war, you know.
What happened to you that day? I mean, could you take us through what you remember happening to you?
Well, the bombardment was the first thing that, you know, it was a terrific bombardment. We had plenty of artillery and this sort of thing. Of course, it was meant to be, we afterwards learned it was found to be, there's going to be a big battle, and it was expected that we would break through. But in the end, it turned out, like many other things on the Western Front, it was a slave all the way. It wasn't going to be easy. And we actually went into the line and came out once or twice before we got very far. I remember some of the villages hadn't been touched until the Chamous started, of course, presenting the Grand, but that stands out in my mind. That was the first place we made for. And, of course, it'll linger until I die, I take it.
So what happened in the attack? You went out after the bombardment, and what happened?
Well, the Germans were going back by the time we nearly got there. I would like to say that there wasn't any hand-to-hand fighting or anything like that. It was a question of observation and act accordingly. See what was happening and give orders accordingly. And I was the 6th Battalion of the Fusiliers, the 149 Infantry Brigade, which had seen quite a lot of action in the north. So we were quite seasoned. We had various reinforcements had come out to join us, but they soon were absorbed into the way of the battalion, you know. It was, of course, quite different from the battalion with our local officers that had come out to France. They were mostly officers who had been sent from other regiments quite a lot. That happened quite a lot. And one had to get used. The only people who were permanent in the battalion, I can say now, were the quartermaster sergeants who were behind the line. Ordinary promotion, of course, took place in the ranks, but by that time, One couldn't see.
What I'm really looking for is a description of what happened in your attack on the Somme. I mean, do you not remember what actually happened to you now?
Oh, well, all I can see is that we advanced when we were told to, were signalled to go forward, you know, and this sort of thing. And I remember there were very few Germans, as a matter of fact, when we first went over. They had all gone back.
And this is in September?
This is in September, that's right.
Did you occupy the German front line?
We occupied where the Germans had left, the trenches, you know.
Did you suffer many casualties?
Oh, yes. The casualties was nobody's business. I don't think I can mention any figures. But the casualties in the Somme battles were terrific. And one of the things that you saw most when I first took notice around about me was the number of ambulances and this sort of thing that were still taking casualties out.
So what happened after this attack? Because you left the battalion shortly after, did you?
Oh, no, I carried on. We got through Brissant and Petit. We actually got beyond Albert, through Contalmaison, one of the first villages through Albert and this sort of thing. And the next thing I saw, I remember, it stood out in my memory all these years. We were in Contalmaison one day, coming back from the lines for a rest. And I suddenly saw an officer and a woman and a young girl turn the corner and come down the main street. And I thought, hey, dear me, what's this? It's quite changed because there were no civilians there, you know. And this officer brought this lady down with the girl, and they were checking various parts, and he finally pointed to a place where, and they started to dig. They got a working party from we people, and we discovered the cellar full of nice wine. Things like that stand out in your mind rather than anything else. But after that, I was called to headquarters, and I had been told I was a candidate for commission, you know, and they just warned me that they would make arrangements as soon as they could. And after that, I just carried on in A Company. Nothing special happened. It was a slog, of course, in and out of the trenches. There was gunfire.
In the Somme area.
But there wasn't much fighting.
Well, that would be towards the end of the Somme battle, yes.
Towards the end of the Somme battle, that's right. We suffered a lot. I mean, see, I must tell you these things when I remember them. There was one morning, it had been so bad in the lines that you couldn't urinate. Half the battalion couldn't urinate.
Why not?
Oh, their state of their nerves and their body, I take it, had been wound up so much that the cold sort of acted as a stopper for their usual habits. And I remember what a concern there was that morning when all these people were protesting that they couldn't urinate.
Did it happen to you?
No, it didn't happen to me, but there you are. I suppose everybody's different. But it made you think what was happening, what was going to happen on the Somme if you had this sort of thing happen. But in the end, the doctor came. Everybody had a tutter room and this sort of thing. And it was purely the cold that had stopped the whole business. And we came back, I remember, through Albert, where the thing hung over the church, you know. And beyond that, I had to leave then.
How did you hear about that? What happened exactly? Had you had an interview about the possible commission?
Oh, yes, I'd seen the brigadier.
What had happened at that interview?
Interview? The colonel called me in and said the brigadier wanted to see you. And he greeted me warmly. He knew I'd been in France for a while, you know. Asked me how I felt. And, oh, how old are you, Henderson? And I had to tell the truth. I was underage, you know. But that didn't seem to worry him at all. He says, well, he says, you've been nominated by your battalion, like a good many others in your battalion, and they've turned out to be a nice lot of chaps, and I'll get you away as soon as possible. So back I went to the battalion. And now we moved away from the Somme shortly after that. There was nobody there I knew in the battalion, and we got back to the salient again. We marched back to the salient, and that was for the Third Battle of Ypres.
You see, that's a year later.
Yes.
When did you leave the battalion, you see? I thought you left just after the Somme.
I must say again that whilst we were on the Somme, we did all sorts of things besides go into the trenches. The battalion was used as a labourer, to tell you the truth. These tanks were new. They had been stuck here and stuck there. We did a lot of digging out and things like that. Then afterwards, we had a spell at... what did it call the place? Where we just went and did labouring work. There was plenty to do, you know.
So when did you leave the battalion to become an
officer? I left the battalion the same day as we moved to the new billet.
Towards Ypres?
Eh? Yes, through Ypres. And it was what they called the Third Battle of Ypres. And that night...
Now, so you were in the Somme area from roughly September 16, right through to the Battle of the Somme had finished?
Yes, all connected with the Battle of the Somme.
But the Battle of the Somme finished in November 1916.
That's right, yes.
So what were you doing between November 1916 and August 1917?
Well, the battalion, the division moved up north again to Ypres. And we went to the... place where the third battle took place. And what did they call it? And my God, if you got there, you were lucky. It was one of these places that had seen battle after battle. It was raining, it was the winter, telephone wires were above your head, were underneath your feet, duck boards had been laid in some places which sprung up and hit your face if you weren't careful. And getting up there, I remember, was worse than being in the trenches for 12 months. It was a terrible place. And the first night there, the colonel came to see me and he says, I'm sending you off tonight, Henderson. Good luck and this sort of thing. And I said to myself, how the hell am I going to get a train with that stuff to go through, you know? However, the parade called the men who were entitled to leave that night, I remember, and the orderly officer came and read their names, and the battalion sergeant major, when he heard my name, he says, he's a candidate for commission, sir.
So this didn't happen in December 1915, as you mentioned before. This was after the Somme and in Ypres.
Did I say December 1915?
Well, that's what you implied, yes. You said it was before the Somme. Never mind. Tell me this. So you've told this story already. So the colonel said you had to go anyway. But when was this? Because we're sprayed about across 3 years here now.
Well...
Passchendaele, 3rd Ypres, was August through
just
to November.
What did I do? I was gazetted to the Cameroonians. Then I went to the East Yorks. that would be about 9 months. I should say it was 1917.
Right, so this happened in 1917, after you'd moved up to Ypres.
Yes.
And then you went back on leave.
That's right, yeah.
So what happened? That was your first leave, was it?
Second leave.
So the other leave was the story you told before, minus the bit about the promotion.
That's right, yeah.
Right. So what happened when you went back to get your commission and your leave?
To England. I was ordered to report to the 5th Argyll and Southern Highlanders at...
Did you not go to officers' training corps at school of some sort?
Oh, just a moment. This was a job that they had for one or two officers, getting prisoners that had been sent to England to get them into camps and this sort of thing. So for about a fortnight, I assisted the officers of the 5th Argyles to go about with squads of officers.
And where were they at?
Eh?
Where was that based at?
And their place was at Ripon. And we went into the Midlands and all sorts of places like that with squads of prisoners, you know.
What were the prisoners like? I mean, how did they behave? What was their mood?
Well, some of them were obstreperous, of course, but on the whole, they knew they were obliged to go or else get a kick up the bottle. And you see, in those days, it wasn't a peculiar thing for a sergeant major to lose his temper and kick them up the bottom. But I enjoyed it. Ripon was near home. I got to see my people once or twice, you see. And then I received a message to say that I was being posted to the Officers' Training Corps at Oxford, and I would be billeted in Wadham College.
What do you remember about the way you were trained as an officer at Oxford?
Well, bear in mind, I'd seen most of what went on in the army and under actual conditions, you know. I was treated very well. They knew I was young, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was, of course, I could play rugby in those days. I'd always been a rugby player. And strange to say, I got on very well indeed. And it was about the time that we were becoming sympathetic to the White Russians. Bear that in mind. So after a while, I was told to report to the East Yorkshire, 13th East Yorks, at the coastal town of, oh damn, what was it again? The nearest town route was Ipswich, but it was a town on the coast near to Ipswich.
I can't think of it either, so carry on anyway.
Aldborough,
right, okay.
Yes, and I was attached to the 13th East Yorks.
Now, what sort of a reception did they give you as a new young officer?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you what it was. It was the beginning of their determination to send a division to Russia. And in doing so, they had told all sorts of people, listen to this, all sorts of people to report to the East Yorks to form a battalion. And we got a motley crew. Not that they were rugged or anything like that, but they were a mixed crew. And I trained with them. And then, just before we set off for Russia, the divisional commander had said to the War Office...
But this is after the end of the war.
After the end of the war? Oh no, during the war. And he said that he would like all his officers to wear the same uniform. And a lot of the officers protested. Bear in mind that there were majors, captains, and myself, a second lieutenant to begin with, you see, then a lieutenant. We didn't count much. But the War Office, in the end, at all the protests about altering uniforms, the War Office decided to call a meeting of all the people who were not East York people, and they would vote on it, and they would give everybody £20 to change their uniform. And in the end, on a vote, we were beaten by the senior officers. We, rookie officers, would have done anything, you see? But they beat us. And the War Office decided that anybody who wasn't prepared to accept the £20 would go back to their regiments.
So this was in 1918?
Yes. So I left the East Yorks.
You weren't prepared to do that then?
Well, I was going by the vote. The senior officers had voted this offer down from the War Office. And the War Office withdrew it, of course. And we, in that position, would have to go back to our regiments. And I had to join my 2nd Battalion of the Cameronians, now, which was a regular battalion, of course.
How come that was your regiment, then?
What's that?
How come you said that was your regiment? I thought you'd been commissioned into the East Yorks.
No, my commission was into the Cameronian Scottish Rifles.
But you hadn't gone to them before the East Yorks?
No, I hadn't been to them at all.
And where were the 2nd Battalion?
2nd Battalion were in France, and I reported to the depot at Invergordon. And after a while, I was given the necessary certificates, etc., to go and join them. And I joined the 2nd Battalion of the Scottish Rifles, and I was with them until the war finished. And I was one of the officers. By that time, I was a full loot, and by that time, I was one of them who blew the whistle on Armistice Day.
Now, that's rather running through it rather quickly. Well, could you tell me a little more about your service with the 2nd Battalion then? What sort of reception did they... Where were they when you joined them?
They were at Arras, the nearest big town.
And when about in 1918 did you join them?
At Arras, just outside of Arras.
When?
Eh?
When?
Oh, no.
Was it after the Germans' big attack or during the British advance?
During the British advance. The war was collapsing then. And it wasn't very long after I joined them that we took up the chase of the Germans.
What do you remember then about your service with them? Are there any stories you can tell us or anything?
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. They were regular officers, half regular officers, and half wartime, you know. I got on very well. I went to D Company.
D Company?
Yeah, D Company.
And what was it like to be an officer compared to being with another, you know, when you were just an ordinary private and lance corporal?
funny how jobs you get. Well, the only time I got spoken to in the army was when I was with D Company, as I say, of the Scottish Rifles. And one afternoon, we practically stopped. The war was nearing an end. And there was a chap arrived, all dressed up in captain's uniform, and new and polished, you know. And I was only a full loot in charge of the company. And the next day, of course, I says to him at breakfast, "You'll take the orderly room this morning, will you?" And he took the orderly room, and he hadn't the foggiest idea what that meant, I don't think, because in the end, the colonel sent for me during the afternoon, and he said, "Henderson," he says, "what the hell do you mean by sending two people to my orderly room this morning?" He says, "Things like that you should have dealt with." "Oh," I says, "I didn't take the orderly room this morning, sir." I says, "Captain so-and-so arrived yesterday afternoon, and when I asked him who'd sent him, he said the orderly room, so I guess he was being appointed captain of D Company." Oh, and the colonel did lather me. He says, you are in charge of D Company, aren't lie. They will tell you that they are not in charge, and this sort of thing, you know. The only time I ever got a dressing down in the army. But we got over that.
Did you do any actual fighting with the battalion, do you remember?
Incidentally, to a war finishing, by that I mean, we set off, and we were going to, we were keeping pace with the Germans, and every morning we went into extended order, covered a part of the country, and went forward, keeping roads in view, of course, and quite often on that journey towards Germany, Germans came out of houses and factories and this sort of thing who had been hiding, waiting of where people going.
Surrendering,
you know. And in the end, we were called together one night. We had all sorts of billets. We had to go and get the men into billets wherever we stopped. And I can tell you the route, because I'd taken the same route in the first war.
When you were out there the first time.
Yeah, that's right. Followed the same route. And then we were told the night before the 11th of November that we had to carry our whistles and blow them at 11 o'clock the next morning. And which we did, and there wasn't a German to be seen. It wasn't a, you know, and the war ended.
How did you feel about that? Were there any celebrations, or how did you...
Oh, yes, the men were absolutely dancing amongst themselves, you know, wishing they'd had a pint, and they soon got one, of course, wherever they went to, I don't know. Yes?
And what about you and the officers? Did you celebrate?
Well, yes, we all had a batman, of course, in those days, and it wasn't long before they had a feast, got together. Billets were the most important part, and you know, we had to do all sorts of jobs. I got to one house, and the lady said, yes, I had one room. And I said, well, could I see it? And she says, no. I says, what for? She says, well, there's a girl in there going to have a baby by a German officer. And I don't want any trouble. I'm telling you, but I don't want any trouble. And, he just passed on. And we cut trees down to try and get a bit of fuel for some of the people. We did all sorts of things. We're not army men. Immediately the war finished, we were labourers, doing this, that and the other, getting food, not only for human beings, but for animals. I remember what a disgraceful state most of the animals, cows and things like that, how thin they were when you went into the sheds and things. And beyond that, as I say, it wasn't soldiering, it was being top-hole civilians.
Well, how did you get on with your servant? You know, do you remember his name?
Oh, I had a batman, and I never had a wrong word with him at all. He looked after me like a mother.
What did he do for you?
Well, he was always a cup of tea in the mornings, you know. And we usually had a mess somewhere, but if there wasn't a mess, he was quite capable of running you up a meal and even purchasing things if you could get a chance. And it was whilst I was with the Cameroonians like that I was PMC of the mess, buying and getting... was doing other things. There was always a bad side to everything. For instance, there was one morning